A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back to Not Another Mummy Podcast. I'm Alison Perry, and you're listening to episode 23. If you're into interiors, then you might have heard of my guest on this episode. Emily Murray is a mum of two and the founder of The Pink House, a website dedicated to fabulous family living, where she shows readers how to balance creating a gorgeous home filled with beautiful things that make you happy with having somewhere that your kids can run around and play without fear of sticky fingers ruining a velvet sofa or a football crashing into your favourite vase. In my chat with Emily, she shares her tips on how to find your own personal interior style and what you should do if your partner or children aren't keen on your ideas for a room. We also chat a lot about Emily's experience of motherhood and how she found it difficult when her eldest was a baby, and it led her to move back from London to Edinburgh so that she could be closer to her family when she needed support. Oh, and there's a great moment where Emily talks about a very naked experience that she had. So I hope you enjoy this episode. Welcome, Emily.
Thanks.
It is fabulous to have you on the podcast.
Oh, thank you.
For anyone who doesn't know Emily, let me describe you. Describe you? That sounds really bad.
No, go for it.
Introduce you is probably a nicer way of saying it.
Wearing my best jumper.
You're wearing a beautiful pink jumper, which is very on brand. So you're a pink-haired mum of two, a journalist turned blogger. Is that a fair description of your job?
I think that pretty much sums it up.
And you're the founder of The Pink House, which is a website on stylish family living. And we used to work together, didn't we?
We did indeed.
At
if you can call it work. Not just messing about with Barbies on the floor.
It definitely was work.
Okay.
We worked
drinking
on
drinking wine.
Yes, we weren't drinking wine during the day. Let's
weren't
be
you?
Clear.
I was.
I wondered why you were all so happy.
That's kind of what I was doing.
So we worked on More Magazine, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
Rest in peace, More Magazine.
No.
Then you moved from London to Edinburgh when you had a family, didn't you? And that's where the original Pink House was. So tell me a bit about the original Pink House and what led you to set up the website.
Okay. The original Pink House was a Victorian terraced house in Edinburgh down this really pretty little street. And it wasn't pink when we bought it. It was white. And as a result, stood out on the street, and not in a good way, because all the other houses were different pastel colours. And ours was the only non-coloured one. So once we bought it, I decided that we needed to paint it. And initially, I wasn't thinking pink enough. And I was just thinking, what can I get the husband to agree to? And because there were greenhouses on the street already, and I knew that he liked green because it goes with ginger hair, apparently. I don't know if that's true, but that's what he says. I managed to get him to agree that we could paint the house green. Farinball green, obviously. And then one day I thought, no, I don't think the house should be green. And I don't think that the street needs another greenhouse. It should be pink. And then I said to him, well, I think we should paint it pink instead. And he just went, no fucking way. Like, that's not happening. Am I allowed to swear on this,
by the way? You can swear.
Yeah, there's no children listening.
We'll put a warning on it.
A beep. Okay. So, yeah, he said no, quite emphatically. And I decided to change his mind. So what I did was there are 15 houses on that street. And through every single door, I put a piece of paper saying, we're going to paint our house. Should we paint it green? Or should we paint it pink? And I got all the replies back. And then I told Ewan, the husband, that that people had voted overwhelmingly for a pink house.
And had they?
No, no, not at all. Everybody said they wanted it to be green. But people don't have imagination. So that's how it came to be pink. That's the first bit. So that was the first bit of your question, was the actual house.
Yes.
That's why it was pink. And then we did it up and, you know, we lived there for 7 years, so it took that time to make it colourful and non-white, and because it was quite beige inside as well. So that was really the start of me getting properly into the whole interiors thing. I've always been into doing up houses and rooms and gang huts and dolls houses and anything I can get my hands on. But this house was a real, like, I was going to say a real project. It wasn't a project in that we had to do massive renovations, but we knocked down some walls and, like, completely gutted some rooms, like the bathroom. And in doing all of that, it kind of reminded me how much I loved interiors and maybe that this could be the kernel of what I was going to do next. And I'd always wanted to start a business after having kids. And having moved out of London and moved away from the magazines that we worked in, I kind of felt even more, because I thought I was going to stay in Edinburgh, I felt even more that I needed to create my own space, my own thing, my own business that I could build and grow, rather than constantly being on the phone to magazines in London and feeling like I wasn't part of it. So then it was like, okay, it's going to be a business. But then what kind of business? What's it going to be about? And I quickly decided that it should be something to do with writing. And you were one of my inspirations because you had created this amazing blog and had very similar background to me. And essentially you'd created your own magazine online that you were responsible for. And I could see increasingly that digital was the way forward, much as I didn't want it to be because I like pieces of paper and I don't really understand techie stuff. But I thought, this is what's going on. This is where it's headed. So it should be a blog type thing, at least to start with. And then what should it be about? And very quickly, the answer just came to me that it should be interiors. And then you and I went for afternoon tea at the Soho Hotel. And then you said, what's the blog going to be called? And I had no idea that I was going to open my mouth and say the pink house. But that's exactly what I said. And there we go. You're a big part of this whole story. It was born from that.
I basically just made you tell that story just so that I could revel in the glory of being part of it.
Absolutely. And so you should. I would if I were you. But it's funny how these things happen, because I think it's a combination of, I really thought about it. Like, I worked in a PR agency for a little while and I considered starting a content agency, but it didn't really make my heart sing. And I think when I just missed out on getting a job at this big creative agency in Edinburgh, and I thought, oh, well, it's fine. I'll go back and I'll do my content agency. I was like, oh, I don't want to go and start a content agency. I want to do something that's more fun than that. And I've always enjoyed writing first-person pieces and writing in the first person. And I've always said my dream as a journalist was to write these sort of column-type pieces about experiences. And, you know, when we were at Moore, I was the only one who volunteered for the 24 Hours Naked feature.
That was an epic feature.
That was a career highlight. And I'm not joking, that really was. Playing Bulls while completely naked with my photographer, who's completely naked.
So we should explain, you went to a nudist...
How did we get onto this?
But you went to a nudist beach holiday?
No, it was a village.
Oh, a nudist village.
Village. Okay. Like, as in people lived nakedly.
Nakedly.
It's the only way you were allowed to live. Although, I'm not sure how that worked in the wintertime. Because we were there, I mean, it was the Costa del Sol, so it was warmish most of the time.
It still gets a wee bit chilly there, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, you wouldn't want to be wandering around with all your bits out the whole time. But when we went, it was relatively warm. You know, it was properly like nice beach weather. But you weren't allowed in if you had your kit on. So me and my photographer were like, right, literally in the house we were in, you had to take your clothes off and walk outside. It was the most counterintuitive thing that's ever happened to me. And I thought I was quite brave and not really that bothered about my body. But there's nothing like having to literally take your clothes off to go outside to make you feel quite uneasy. And then the moment when I had to order a Diet Coke in the bar, inside. So you walk in and it's a bar. It's like those nightmares that people have.
The bar staff are naked too, though, aren't they?
No, they're not. They were fully clothed.
That's not fair.
Yeah. And you know the bar, like the counter, it comes up to, as I discovered, never thought about this before, just below your boobs.
Yeah.
So you go up. This actually happened. I went up to the bar, totally naked. I mean, I'm talking muff out. It's like there is nothing on me apart from a necklace. And I went up and it was deserted in the bar. And there were like a couple of guys in their bar staff kit. And I'm there with my tits going, please can I have a Diet Coke?
What's the thinking behind the bar staff wearing clothes?
I don't know. But then I thought, would it actually be weirder if they didn't have any clothes?
Let's face it, Emily, nothing is not weird about that that situation.
You know what the most weird thing in retrospect about that situation is? Why the fuck was I ordering a Diet Coke? I needed a triple vodka. Because then I once after that experience where I was all like, right, this is really, really weird, I then started drinking in earnest and things just got so much easier.
Life lesson for us all there.
Yeah.
So this one must all seem very tame in comparison to your wild Moore magazine writing days.
Well, I think, yeah, but, well, it's so different. I was in such a different place then. I mean, I was staying out all night and going to work and doing my work on no sleep. And this is, you know, I'm sober much of the time. And I often have 8 hours sleep now because my kids are a bit older. I never thought I would get that sleep back. But
so your kids are 8 and 5?
Nearly 8. But yeah, he will, by the time people listen to this, he'll probably be 8. Yeah. And God, that's so sort of meta to think like that.
That's why I love you, Emily. So professional.
And yeah, the other one just turned 5. But I feel like I have a whole new lease of life now. Mm. Like being in the trenches, as I sort of refer to it, when the kids were really little, babies, toddlers, it was, oh my God, I think it's something I try to talk about quite a lot, because I really feel that when I was at that stage, people didn't say to me, you know what, it really does get a lot easier. I felt that there was a lot of people saying, oh, it just gets hard in a different way. And it's like, it's bullshit. Okay, it's for me. Everybody's experiences are different.
Yeah.
But for me, yeah, okay, there are things that are harder now. There are different things and it's maybe more psychologically difficult. But I think it's like 10 times easier now. Mm. I have my life back.
Yeah.
My brain works again. You know, I can function. I can run a business. I can go out at night. I can leave my kids with people. They don't scream all the time. They don't need to suck fluids from my body. I mean, I just feel like it's so different. And I was worried, I was worried that my life was going to be forever the way it was when they were really little, which makes no sense.
No, I think loads of us feel that way. I definitely felt that way.
Yeah.
Even just having the one baby, I just felt like, oh my goodness, this is my life from now on. And I suffer from PND, which I felt like when I was at the depths of that, I just thought, oh, this is my life.
This is it.
Yeah.
But it makes no logical sense, does it?
No.
Because we know that time passes and children grew up.
But when you're sleep deprived and when you are having such a shock to the system and your whole world is turned upside down, as happens to most of us, it's you're not thinking logically. You're not thinking, you know, you can't remove yourself from the situation, look down on it and go, oh, it could be all right.
Yeah, it's true. But actually, it's funny because you're so, you know, that thing about being in the moment. People talk about wanting to be in the moment. I've seen so many Instagram posts of people saying my New Year's resolution is to live in the moment.
Yeah.
But actually, how much more in the moment are you living? You might not be happy in your moment, but you are in that moment.
Mm.
You're not thinking about the fact that your kids are going to grow up and get older and that you're going to die one day and all that stuff. You're just thinking, my God, my baby is never going to sleep.
Yeah.
And you literally are just in that moment.
Yeah.
But it doesn't do you much good.
Well, it's not a good moment.
It's not a good moment.
But you know what? I not everyone has this experience, and I just really envy those people who feel completely fulfilled by motherhood. Yeah. And, you know, I've got friends who say things like, oh, I just love the newborn stage. I just love that cuddly, snuggly stage.
I know.
And I can't identify with that.
I can't identify either. I feel sorry for people when I see, I genuinely feel sorry for people when I see people who are pregnant. And I know it's not that they're probably deliriously happy, but I'm like, oh my gosh, the very thought of having to go through that again, oh, it fills me with dread. Like, people say, oh, they grew up too soon. My children have not grown up too soon. My children have grown up just quickly enough that I didn't go completely mad.
I think you and I are very similar in that the baby stage is like a means to an end for us rather than something that can be enjoyed and, you know.
But I think that has to do with, well, it's hard to pull it apart. I think my first child was such a bad sleeper. I mean, he's the reason that we moved to Edinburgh.
Yes.
I never wanted to move.
I was going
to
move on to that, actually.
Come nicely round to that.
The reason that you moved up to Edinburgh was because of, you know, your family situation, wasn't it?
It was literally, I genuinely think, had he been one of those kids, those babies, that sleeps, it wouldn't have had to be a brilliant sleeper, just not up 10 times every night, And that, but even that maybe I could have coped with had he not been a nightmare in the daytime too. Mm-hmm. And who knows, maybe he had some kind of a refluxy majiggy thing. Mm-hmm. But nothing was ever diagnosed. But he just cried a lot. And he didn't want to go in the buggy. And I had to carry him everywhere. And he wouldn't nap. Like babies, generally, you put them in the buggy and you shuggle them around, you go for a walk and they fall asleep. Mm-mm. I literally had to put him in one of those bouncy slings, Earth Mother type slings. And then I would have to jump up and down. I'm talking literally bouncing. And shake bells in his ear.
Oh my goodness.
So can you imagine, like, going out for a coffee? Like, I would see these mums. I thought this is what happened to you when you had babies. And for many people it is. You go to a nice coffee shop and you rock your baby to sleep. Or they sit for 20 minutes quite happily in the buggy and you give them a toy and they look at it and they go, yeah. No, none of that. I was shaking bells and jumping up and down and screaming children and it was so hard.
And which, when that happens, it means you just stop going out.
Yeah, exactly. But I tried to keep going out and I did my best and I'd be out with my friends and we'd even try going to wine bars at 5 p.m. But I was so tired, like I'd have one sip and I would be like, it was just awful. And so I never wanted to leave London. I love London so much. It's like a big, big deal. It's a big part of who I am. I feel like I earned the right to live here, that my whole media life has been here, and being in the media was something that I very much chose. It was not something that was ever offered to me. Mm. It was very specifically something that I chose based on just my own predilections and my desires. And I don't know, it just felt like I had really worked for it.
Yeah.
And then to leave, it took a lot to oust me and bring me back to Edinburgh. Because much as Edinburgh is a beautiful city, for me, it felt like going backwards.
Yeah.
That was where I grew up. It's where I, whatever. And I have a strange relationship with Scotland anyway, because my parents are English and I was born in Scotland and brought up there, but the area of Scotland that I was brought up in was, there were a lot of people who had had a very tough life and they were looking for someone to blame, and this English family landed right in the middle of their community and we were blamed, I think, for their lives. For most people, it was fine. But there were a few people, there was quite a lot of bullying. There were things like my mum being threatened with knives. Mm. There was people be like, my brother would be chased by these boys, like one of which I remember he had a knife, and there were some nasty moments. These were only tiny moments, but they were nasty moments and they stick with you.
Yeah.
And it's very hard to then feel like somewhere is your home. People say, oh, you're Scottish, and I'm like, no, I'm not really. I wish I could say I was, and Scotland's a wonderful, wonderful place with some of my very best friends, and in fact my husband is Scottish. But it's just not who I am for various reasons. Yeah. So coming back to London, once I'd managed to get myself out of the baby fog and into a place where I felt we could function again as a family, has felt like an amazing... it's like I've been given a second chance.
Mm.
I mean, yeah. I mean, that's quite an extreme way of putting it. And I would have been very happy to carry on living in Edinburgh. And I think that's one of the things that people find hard to understand, because they assume that I must have been unhappy in Edinburgh to make such a massive move back, because it has been like we sold and bought. It wasn't like we were renting and we moved back. We bought a house in Edinburgh and then we sold it again and we bought a house here in London, and it was a huge upheaval, and the kids, you know, had to move schools. We had to so much. I mean, only mine and my husband's work, we could be, it's better for us, both of us, in London. But I think for me, I've been a very optimistic person, and I've always been a very kind of proactive person. So once I'd gotten into my head that we could move back and my husband was on board with it, it was a case of going, it's not that it wasn't the stick beating us away, it was the carrot looked very, very juicy, and suddenly I really liked carrots. But yeah, so it was enough that there was exciting things to go for.
Yeah.
Whereas I think for a lot of people, there has to be that sort of, oh, it's bad where we are.
Yeah.
Whereas it absolutely wasn't. We had a lovely, lovely life in Edinburgh.
And I mean, was it at all heartbreaking leaving this amazing house? Because you did your house up in Edinburgh and it was beautiful. And you launched the Pink House website, you know, using all these gorgeous glossy photographs that your friend Susie took for you. And then you sold up and someone else is now living in that house. What was that like?
It's funny because it really wasn't upsetting for me at all.
Oh, really?
Like, I think so many people were upset for me. And I got so many Instagram messages from people saying, oh, you must be devastated. I'm upset for you. I'm sad you're leaving your house. I'm like, why would I be sad? Because I've got a whole new life. I've got a whole new set of exciting things to do. And as soon as I'd made that decision that we were going, and we knew what house we were buying. And, you know, we found this great place. And I was focused on where we were heading to.
Mm.
I just not, it's not in me to look back. The thing that I think that the thing that I was sad, sad's the wrong word, but that wasn't so good was the fact that I knew that it was very hard work doing up a house. And I was like, right, I had to steel myself.
Yeah.
It's like, right, here we go again. So, and it, because, but it wasn't specifically leaving that house behind. I just felt like, wow, what an amazing opportunity I've had to live in this beautiful street in this lovely part of Edinburgh for 7 years. That part of my life was great. In the same way I feel like university was great, but I didn't want to cling on to it.
Yeah.
That was that part of my life. And wow, lucky me, what a great time I had. So this was, that was packaged up as the thing. And then I've moved on.
Mm.
I just, yeah, I'm just very much about what we can do now. And my to-do list is always so long, I haven't got time to think about anything else.
So you're now currently doing up your London home. Mm. And for, I say London home as if you've got multiple homes.
I love it.
Dotted
let's
around.
Let's carry on like
your
that.
Your London
yeah.
abode. yeah, it's really interesting because people can really follow the progress on your Instagram and on your blog, can't they? Which people must feel really invested in the decisions you're making and seeing the gradual change and the gradual process. But how would you describe your interior style? Because it's quite, I mean, when I say unusual, that makes me sound like I'm insulting you somehow. But
no, that's good.
It's quite different. How would you describe it?
Do you think? I think, yeah. That is, I don't think that's an insult. In fact, I think that's, I'm really pleased if people do think that, because I think when, for me, whenever I do something, I know the influences that have brought me to decide those things. So there's always a feeling, I think almost, hopefully, most people or nearly everybody who does something creative, at the back of your mind is, I mean, copying is not what you're doing. This is all part of the creative process, but you kind of think, oh, I'm doing that. It's a bit like that person
yeah,
did.
Yeah.
So I'm more aware of feeling like I want to make sure that what I'm doing does feel very me. I was going to say very unique. But my God, I hate it when people say that. Unique means one of a kind. Just to point this out. This is one of my grammar things. It's like unique means one of a kind. You can't be very one of a kind. You're either one of a kind or you're not. Oh, and if anybody on the subject, if anyone has a sneak peek, it's S-N-E-A-K-P-E-E-K. I'm sorry, I can't help myself.
I've heard you saying that so many times. You've got a real bee in your bonnet about the sneak peek.
Oh, I don't know what it is.
Is it because you see people doing P-E-A-K
yes.
as if it's the yes. peak of a mountain?
Yes, I can't bear it. I think it's because I see words as they're written on the page.
Mm.
For me, a word is its spelling. And so when someone abuses the word like that, it makes me really sad.
I'm not happy. So.
I love words and it makes me sad to see them abused like that. Anyway, so it's totally felt like I had to say that. Feel all kind of passionate and weird. But yes, as for interior styling, I think what it is that I see things that I like and I assimilate them and then I just try and make it happen. But I don't worry about it. I don't think, oh, that might look awful. I think about it for a while.
Mm.
It's not like I rush into things, but I'm not, once I've decided to do something, I just do it. And every so often, I'll do something, I'll think, shit, that really does not look good. But actually, for example, the wallpaper that's in the kitchen now, there's so much of it, this beautiful leafy wallpaper from Sandberg. We put it all up, and because the rest of the room wasn't done, I had a bit of a moment. I was like, oh my gosh, I don't know if this is right. Is it a bit dark? Is it a bit this? But because I hadn't, my vision for this room was to layer it with then have like sort of hot pinks and the pale pinks and lots of actual plants.
Yeah.
And I hadn't added those layers yet. I was only looking at layer one. And I think that can be the scary bit. When you're building a room, you've done the first layer and you have to look at it and go, oh my God, it doesn't look like I imagined. Well, of course it doesn't. Mm. You've still got to keep going. But then that's the bit where you've got to really have that courage of your conviction and go, no, I do know what I'm doing and I'm going to keep going. Because I think, actually, as I'm even talking, I think what a lot of people probably do, and I used to do, is that you kind of do the first thing and then you kind of lose confidence a little
bit.
And
lose momentum.
And then you fudge it a little bit. Mm. And then as a result, the whole end result looks a little bit, Whereas actually, if you'd just gone, you know what, I'm just going to keep going and I'm going to be bold and I'm going to keep... There's something about that boldness and having a conviction and not letting somebody else come in halfway through, your partner or whatever, and sort of say, oh, I think it should be more like this. Because
yeah.
That's why I do this series called How to Win the Interior War. Because for me, it's really, really important to have a creative vision for a room and not have it as just everything be a compromise. I think if you really, really care and your partner is not that bothered, or your kids are not that bothered, because quite frankly, most kids aren't, you should stick up for yourself and try and get things your way, because everyone will be happier. The room will look better for it. At least that's what I tell myself.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
So who are your interiors influences? Like, who would you say when you're looking around, you know, what you've done so far, where do you look for your inspiration?
Well, I've loved Living Etc. magazine for years now, and I have every single issue for the last 7 years. It's the only magazine I subscribe to, and I love the use of colour in lots of the houses in there, and that sort of eclectic, glamorous kind of feel. So I found that they, having a and because I love magazines, I like hard copy magazines, I love having that to look at every month. And I get a lot of ideas from there, and I, from my first house, so many of the ideas came from tearing out pages of Living Etc. And then as Instagram started to come into my world, and blogs, but more Instagram, that was when I started to see more and more different ways of doing things and lots more ideas. But it can be too much sometimes, which is why actually I've almost pulled back a bit, and I don't actually follow that many interiors accounts or read that many interiors blogs, because I find it can confuse me. I maybe spend more time looking at fashion blogs and interiors or people to do with art, because I want to sort of feel like I've had my own, that I have come to these decisions as much myself as I can.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, in terms of specifics, it's really hard for me to pull out anybody particularly that I love. Like, there are interior designers that are great. There are bloggers who are great. And every week I'll have a new crush. So House Curious was one of my big crushes. I just love Summer's house. It's just, I don't know, I can just imagine myself there, and it's got so many sort of lovely elements. And
it's beautiful, isn't it?
It really is, just stunning. And so that often pops into my mind. And also the irreverence that she has, like little touches, like neon signs, which I love. I love my neon sign. Kate from Mad About the House, her style is more kind of pared back and neutral than mine.
Yeah.
But she's kind of a master of making things look good. So I often kind of peer at her rooms and think, why does that work as well as it does?
Analysing the ingredients to what makes something work rather than actually just copying
She's done. Exactly, picking it apart. And similarly, like Kimberly from Swoonweather, she was one of my first big influences. I remember regramming, when I was a complete Instagram newbie, and I found a picture, and it was of her... I didn't know this, but it was off her chest of drawers and art, and she'd done this amazing styled up vignette, and I posted it, and then I got these messages going, and I didn't credit it. I didn't realise, you know, what you were supposed to do. And I got these messages going, that's Kimberly's, like in a slight slapped wrist kind of way. I was like, oh my God, shit. And suddenly I realised, like, it's a big deal to have created something like this, and you own that image, and you own that. Wait, every time anybody wants to showcase that, you have to make sure to credit them. And it was a real learning. And then I realised that, you know, what Kimberly does was amazing. And I started to, like her pin, which is how to put together a bar cart.
Yes.
So when I was just styling something up for this photo shoot that I was doing this weekend, and I was doing my bar cart, and I was a bit like, oh, what am I going to do? I felt like I was suddenly like, how do you style a bar cart? And I went on Pinterest, and instantly Kimberly's how to style a bar cart.
It's really interesting
thing.
Though, isn't it? Because I think that's a really good example of somebody who knows their SEO, because I bought a bar cart over the Christmas holidays. I felt like I was being completely 2015 by buying it.
It does feel a bit retro already.
And I went onto Google and I just wrote, because I was the same as you. I was like, I want to make this look quickly, so quite good for my New Year's Eve party. I haven't really got time to be properly buying stuff for it. Went on to Google how to style a bar cart, and Kimberly's blog post was like maybe the second thing that came up on Google.
She totally knows her SEO, that girl. God, listen to me. I wouldn't have known what I was talking about 2 years ago. Knows her SEO. I don't, like, what is that?
Search engine optimization.
But yes, yeah, anyway, yes.
Yes.
We won't go off on that.
No, dull, boring, techie. So how would you say you strike that balance between having a beautiful, fabulous home and somewhere that is kind of comfortable for a family to live, and you know, you're not constantly worried that stuff's going to get stained and broken and smashed? Is that tricky?
It is. It is hard. And I'd be lying if I didn't have that thing. And I feel bad about it, where I'm like, kids, you have to wash your hands before you get on that sofa, or no food over there, or, you know, take your shoes off before you go in that bit. And I do get pangs of guilt, because I grew up in a very sort of like bohemian style household where you would never have to worry. I mean, the sofa was a tip. I mean, you wouldn't have to worry about that. And the whole thing was that kids should be free to be children. But the thing is, I am who I am, and I am allowed to live my life to a certain extent the way that I want to. And I don't think it's a bad thing for children to learn to respect things. They appreciate this house. I genuinely think, you know, they're two boys. And anyone who says that boys don't appreciate good interior design is bullshit. Like, what I'll often get from the older one, he'll be like, oh, look, mummy, look how the colour of that works with that. Aww. And he's learned.
Are
things.
You like, it's a proud yes. moment?
Yes, genuinely. But it just goes to show that whatever you're into, if you're passionate about it, your kids pick up on that passion. And what does it matter what that thing is? But yeah, to a certain extent, I do make sure they're careful with things. But within that, there are areas of the house that I'm deliberately, like, for example, my new corner sofa. So it's, oh my God, I love this sofa. It's from Sofas and Stuff.
You
and
really do love it.
I really,
you?
Really love it. But because it's grey, it's upholstered in this, it's beautiful. It's like 100% wool, Ian Mankin fabric. It's really, really lovely. But yet it's kind of practical. So it's beautiful. It's cosy. It looks lovely. It's luxurious, but I'm like, although the kids aren't allowed to like actual drinks on it or food, I've told myself I'm not allowed to be anal about it.
Okay.
It's like, I'm not going to literally check their hands before they go on it, because I reckon I chose that fabric. It's got a bit of a sort of mottled weave that even if there's a bit of grub here and there, that's going to be part of the sofa. And I've decided that's fine.
Yeah.
And that, I think that is a big mentality, is going, you know what? There's going to be fingerprints on the velvet sofa. But better to have a velvet... I mean, this was one of my first founding principles of the Pink House, was better to have a velvet sofa with chocolate stains on it than no velvet sofa at all. And I believe that wholeheartedly. I also think that there's something about the wear and tear of family life that adds to a house. Mm-hmm. So the dining table that we've just got, I searched for ages to find the right one. But this is a vintage 19th century French refectory table. And it's covered in ring marks, cup marks. Mm-hmm. And I love that, because I'm like, it's already pre-wrecked. We'll just add to it. So we'll add our layer of family life. And it's like, well, why shouldn't you start your own tradition? I've got a vintage table that I'm adding the rings to, but why not just buy a nice wooden table and start your own rings and scratches? I found like there are little scratches where someone's done some math homework
really?
Or something. And you'd be like, oh no, you have to put something under that. You'd think, you know, new table, make sure you put something under that. Oh no, you've marked the table. It's like, let's just kind of do away with that sense that everything has to be kept pristine.
Yeah.
Isn't life the most wonderful thing about a house? Let's incorporate that. I mean, I'd rather not incorporate the chocolate life on my favourite velvet armchair. But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that mentality gets me a long way.
Yeah. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
So if somebody follows you on Instagram and reads your blog and loves your interior style, how do they go about injecting some of that Pink House feel into their own house?
I think the main thing is to try and, well, you first of all, you need to work out what it is you like. And that sounds like an obvious thing to say, but I feel like I didn't really know what I liked until I started the Pink House, or just before. And that is, you know, whether it's kind of mood boards or just getting your head around things you like and putting them all together, because like writing, it's about, it's more, it's as much about what you're not doing as what, as about what you're doing, because you have to reject so many things. Like, I used to have all this shabby chic stuff in my house. I'm not into shabby chic. I don't like it.
I went through that shabby chic phase too.
Yeah, we've maybe all been there.
Yeah.
But I had to one day just be like, I hadn't realised I didn't like it. It was just, that's what people did.
Yeah.
And it's a bit like clothes as well, but then that actually, that's one of the, a good tip to sort of work out what you like, is you look at, most people find their dress sense before their interior sense, I think.
Yeah.
I certainly did. Look at what you're wearing and look at the colours that you're into and sort of the style. That's probably going to inform your house.
Yeah.
I mean, I definitely dress like I decorate, definitely.
Yeah, you do.
And that's not a coincidence. I think that's because I know my style. Mm. And once you know your style, and so if you feel confident with the way you dress, then look at it. Like, what colour do you wear most of all, like, as a neutral? That should probably be the main colour that you use in your main room, for example. Accent colours are your sort of favourite sort of scarf colours or bright pops of colour that you use. They can, you know, they will probably complement your main colour because you wear them together. So, yeah, if you just don't know where to start, look at your clothes. And then in terms of my actual, like, my personal style, for me it's about finding ways of showing off pink. I mean, because there's actually not that much pink in my house. My husband would disagree. But if you look around this room, we're in the sitting room.
Yeah. It's there are just little accents
of pink. But for me, it makes, there's pink, there's enough pink for me to go, oh, look at all the gorgeous pink. But it's shown off by being, there's so much dark blue and
it's not like you walk in and the walls are pink and the sofa's a different shade of pink.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
So that's what I think. It's like, you can be your favourite colour, but it doesn't mean that has to be the most, you've got to find the way that you most like to see it. So that's the same with the way I dress. Like, I've got a pink jumper on, but I've got grey dungarees. So, yeah.
Okay, so next question. My whole thing with fashion and interiors is that I like to play it safe. And so, for example, I've discussed this with you in the past, and I've asked this question on Instagram a couple of times. What colour should I paint my fireplace? What colour should I paint my walls?
Yeah.
And at the moment, I'm leaning towards painting the fireplace white and painting the walls dark blue. Mm. And every time I mention that, I'll get at least two or three messages from people saying, oh, but the thing is, dark blue is really done now, isn't it? And I want to respond and say, yes, but the thing is, I will only embrace something once it's been done. So, like, skinny jeans, for example, for about 4 years, the world wore skinny jeans and I was convinced I couldn't do them. And then I embraced them.
Yeah.
So I feel like a trend has to die a death and then I will embrace it.
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Yeah, I'm a bit. You see, I feel like I'm a bit like that.
Really?
Yeah, I do. But you see, you know what? This is really interesting. I think I am like that to a certain extent. But being in a sort of, being in the interiors world more now is that I get to see what the trends are or sort of feel like what they're going to be kind of earlier, maybe a year or so earlier than I might have done. So I've gotten used to the idea of the trend quite early and then I'm able to use it in my own house.
I see. But
it's only that the mainstream, it's only just coming out then.
Right.
Anyway.
So you look like an early adopter,
yes, but
actually you're just like me.
I think that really is a big part of it. That coupled with the fact that now I'm kind of off on my own trajectory, I try really hard not to think too much about trends. I like trends. I mean, there's that whole thing people say, oh, you know, you shouldn't listen to trends. But for me, what trends mean now is just what's new.
Mm.
And I like newness and I like to see it. But I'm now much more of a case of that's new, but I don't like it.
Mm.
That's new and I do like it. Or that's new and I'm not sure if I like it, but I'll come back to it. But there's stuff that I know I like and most of it's pink. So it's quite straightforward. And also I like classics. So this rug, this is a vintage. And vintage also is the other thing. Things that are vintage often are timeless. But this vintage Benny O'Rain rug, this was definitely an investment piece. I got it from LaRussi. And I love it so much. This is not going to go out of fashion. This is just a classic rug.
Is it okay that I've currently got my shoes, my trainers on your vintage rug?
So have I.
Okay,
so
good.
It's fine. But you see, that's part of it. That's part of the thing, is that this might have cost me a lot of money, this rug. But it's been around, this rug, for so many years already. It seems to be okay.
I want to sit like this with my legs in the air.
No, seriously. But I think the fact that it's, I don't know, that you can live your life on it.
Yeah.
It's worth more, makes it worth even more. Things that are just for best, that you have to keep looking showroom perfect, surely you should pay much less for them because they're not allowing you to live your life on them.
I love that thinking. Yeah. I love that. Okay, Emily, some quick fire questions for you.
Yep.
What's your biggest interiors regret? So either something that you did that went wrong or something that you didn't do or didn't buy and always regretted.
Oh my gosh. I don't know if this is it at all, but the colour of the walls in my den, in the basement in my last room, I really wanted this initially. I'd seen it in this interior designer's house who helped me with the project, but it was this blueberry blue, really bright, vibrant blue, and I just loved that colour. In the end, I went for this teal colour. Mm. I just don't really like teal. And every time I look at the pictures of that room now, I just think, don't like that. And it was really expensive, the grass cloth. And it just dawned on me as I lived in it that I just didn't really like the colour. But it's fine because that's over now.
Yes.
And it's done. And at the time...
You don't live there anymore.
I don't live there anymore. I think the new owners ripped it out as well.
Oh, no.
I know. But no. And the shabby chic thing generally. But that's fine. I'm going to get new bedside tables. They're going to be gone soon.
Are they shabby chic?
They are.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What surprised you most about motherhood?
How little sleep I actually got. Like, really. Like, how little sleep. I'm just going to keep saying that over and over again because I'm
also
still in shock about it.
But also, I think, well, obviously the question's aimed at you, not me, but for me, I felt like how little sleep you could actually survive on. So actually, the next day, you wouldn't just die despite having had such little sleep.
But you felt like you were going to. I don't know if I was... Yeah, it was just so much harder, generally. It was just so much harder. I genuinely thought it was going to be a year. I'd earned a year of sitting around drinking coffee and watching this perfect little thing that I'd made who I just loved sleep or, you know, gurgle. Nah, not that. Second one was a bit better.
Good.
But still.
You'd earned it. And final question, who's your dream playdate guest?
Ooh, wow. We were just talking about Dara O'Brien then, about his funny NCT thing with Helen, weren't we?
Yeah.
I think it would be rather jolly if he came round for a play date.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to bring any kids. Just maybe a bottle of wine.
That's more of a date, Emily.
Oh, okay. But we'd play too, but that makes it worse.
Okay.
Moving
swiftly on.
Moving on.
Thank you so much for being my guest today. It has been so nice to come to the Pink House and sit on this beautiful sofa, put my trainers all over your vintage rug and chat to you. Thank you.
Oh, thanks for having me, Alison.
Well, I don't know about you, but I am genuinely feeling really inspired after that chat to go and decorate my house in a really fabulous way. Thank you as always for listening, and please do pop over to iTunes and subscribe and rate and review the podcast because it really helps other people discover the podcast. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch up with you next time.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.